Welcome to Local Talk, Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Your hosts for today are Susan Franson and Gina McAndrews. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Mike. We're glad to be here.
And welcome to all our listeners. We have a great show with some fun and some serious topics.
Well, we better start off with the fun. This has been a pretty serious week.
Yes, I agree. And besides, I've been promising to take some road trips now that I'm vaccinated. Actually, this is our second post-COVID road trip. The first was to Story City, where we learned how the celebration of Scandinavian days had to be changed and delayed by social distancing.
Yes, but because they have the historic carousel, they're going to host a national carousel convention. I think that's pretty special.
I think that's what our other towns are going to discover. The isolation of COVID stimulated townspeople to work harder to make their communities better when they could get together. That's certainly true of Nevada.
Oh, yeah? What do you mean?
Well, it all started with children's storybooks.
What do you mean by that?
Someone who lived in Nevada told me about a project from Raising Readers that turned the store windows in downtown Nevada into a storybook. I asked Lisa Reeves, Executive Director of Raising Readers of Story County, to describe it.
Lisa, we've recorded an interview with you about Raising Readers earlier, back when you were talking about library programs, I think. And now you're really bringing it into the community. You want to tell us how you got the idea to do this and what it is?
On a normal basis, we do an event in Nevada and in Ames called Step Into Storybooks. In Nevada, we do it at Central Elementary every spring, and the idea of the event is to have literacy-based activities for children and families to do throughout, and we set it up stations throughout Central Elementary, and it's on a Saturday morning, and the kids can do the activities, and then they can choose the book to take home. And so we wanted to continue that tradition and have an event. And we knew that during COVID, we would need to do something outside. So we have had really a fantastic committee that has pulled together an event that we'll have on May 8th at Harrington Park in Nevada. And it will be from 9:30 to 11:30. And our partners are the Nevada Kiwanis and Mark Olson Real Estate for the event.
And what is the event?
The event will be, we will have stations set up under the shelter. The ISU Extension, Nevada Library, Raising Readers, Story County Conservation, Natalie Welter, and Iowa Farm Bureau Ag in the Classroom will all have literacy-based activity packets, take-home packets in baggies that the kids can come and pick up and take home, and they are based on a book. And so the kids can walk around and see what the activities are and talk with the station hosts. And then we'll also have where the kids can pick out a book to take home. And then we'll have a scavenger hunt and another story walk. So right now we are doing a story walk. The downtown businesses, we have 17 businesses that agreed to have a page of a storybook in their front window. So the kids can walk from store to store and read the book. And so that was kind of in preparation for the event on May 8th, just to keep it kind of fresh in people's minds. So then the event at Harrington Park we'll also have a story walk through, you know, just as you go up to that shelter.
But the downtown story walk is going on right now, is that right?
It is, yes. 17 businesses agreed to put a page of a storybook in their front window, and so we put those up. It's a giant storybook, so it's a pretty good sized page of a storybook that's in each of the windows.
Did you blow up those pages, or are they just, it's just a big book?
Seen them. Librarians use them a lot. Elementary school librarians use giant books a lot. They're just an oversized book so that you can see the pages easier during story time.
Well, and what kind of reception have you gotten?
Everyone was thrilled to participate in the event. They all thought that it was a fun idea, and there have been kids that have walked through and read the stories. So that's fun.
Okay. Well, and I'd also like to comment for our listeners who probably used to listen to Reading Radio at noon on Wednesdays, that you've now moved that. And so when can people listen to Reading Radio now?
I believe that is actually through the Ames Public Library.
Oh, so not through Reading
Raising Readers. No, we don't do that.
Okay. Well, that sounds like you've got a couple exciting events there. So anything else you want to say before it's time to hang up?
No, I just wanted to thank all of our committee members who have come together to put together the event, and thank KHOI for helping us to advertise it. On May 8th, at Harrington Park in Nevada, and it's from 9:30 to 11:30, and it's for families with children from ages 0 to 8.
Well, thank you very much.
In case you just tuned in, this is KHOI Community Radio, Story City Ames, with your regular hosts, Susan Franzen and Gina McAndrews. And we just got done talking with Lisa Reeves, the Executive Director of Raising Readers of Story County, about the Step Into Storybooks at Harrington Park in Nevada that will take place on May 8th from 9:30 to 11. Right now, there's a related event taking place downtown Nevada. Susan stopped by to talk with Mark and Amber Olson about how Nevada has found community opportunities in the wake of COVID-19.
Hello, thank you for asking us to join you today. I am Amber Olson, and this is my husband,
Mark Olson,
and we own the RE/MAX Concepts here in Nevada. We are part of the Mark Olson Real Estate. With the pandemic, we've been really trying to reach out to our community and help out our small businesses in the area, and so Raising Readers had asked us to be involved in their storybook walk. And so that is where they place one page from a storybook in our business window. And they asked about maybe 15 or 16 other businesses to do the same. And so then the families can walk down business to business, and they'll each read one page of a storybook in the window. So we were really excited to be asked to be a part of this, because Raising Readers, we know, is a great program. And we were excited to be able to bring literacy downtown Nevada as well.
Have you had any interactions with the children reading your window?
A friend of ours said that she stopped by and she was able to take her daycare kids and go around Nevada and read the pages in the window. It's really neat because Nevada is really pushing hard to get people to come downtown and visit and see everything that we have to offer. So this is just one great way to get families downtown Nevada to check out our businesses and be involved.
So what are some other ways that
things that people come downtown for?
We have a lot of different groups going on that has been really great. Nevada is now a Main Street community, and so we no longer have a Chamber of Commerce. We have the Main Street community, and so they've been doing some great activities, such as bringing people down for, instead of just doing like a downtown business trick-or-treat night before Halloween, they are putting together a Halloween festival, so they've done that. They've done a Christmas downtown tree lighting, and they had Santa Claus come out and help light the lights on the Christmas tree in front of State Bank. Just recently, a business downtown that just opened this fall, it's called Bricktown Bakery, they held a run that was just a little fun 1 mile fun race for family and, you know, kids, but it was 1 mile, and the families got together, met downtown, ran or walked or biked or scooted however they wanted to for 1 mile, and then they got a little donut afterwards. And I guess that was, they had over 250 participants, which was the largest crowd that they had sign up for a run in Nevada's history so far. We have a running group that's called RUN Run. It stands for Runners United Nevada. And they've also put together a lot of neat races that is including our community, the downtown area, and the historical part of Nevada as well. And so they have a 4-run series. And so that's getting people out into the community and meeting each other. And in May, actually, they have a famous singer coming to Nevada. And he is going to be part of the run as well. We'll run the 5K, and those are all 5Ks. We'll run the 5K first, and then Brian White will actually be performing on Saturday, May 22nd, after everyone gets through the 5K. So there's been that. We've done something that we've put together is the Easter Bunny rode in the fire truck, because during COVID, we realized that not a lot of kids are able to see the Easter Bunny. So this started last year, and then we did it again this year, where we had the Easter Bunny ride in a fire truck, and we kind of cruised around Nevada, and so the kids could come out as, you know, and say hi, give a wave to the Easter Bunny, and then they could meet the Easter Bunny at Score Park and snap a quick little picture with the bunny as well. So we did that. There's been a lot of different activities. I feel like COVID has really brought our community closer together. We were trying to figure out, everyone's trying to figure out ways that we can be involved and reach out to those community members that, you know, give them something fun to do. And one of the things that Mark can speak more about is the Nevada Community Rodeo.
Yeah, so this year, last year we had to postpone the rodeo due to COVID, but this year at the end of August we'll be bringing the rodeo back to town, and we look forward to seeing everybody at that.
Nevada hasn't traditionally had a rodeo, has it?
No, it took a back seat for a little while. There's about 10 or 12 years where they did not have the rodeo, and we brought that back about 3 years ago now, I guess. So you can see, like, 2019 we were awarded, you know, several awards for the rodeo that we had, and we had a lot of momentum built up on that. I think that last year we had the rodeo, we figured we had close to 1,900 people in attendance, so it really took off with a great success. So we're looking forward to bringing that back this year and hopefully being able to get everybody back together.
Mm-hmm. And every year we keep having to find more bleachers, more seats for people, because that's always the big thing. We have a big crowd and then we need to find them the seating. So every year we've been upgrading our bleachers.
I've lived in this area for 50 years, and for years I never heard of a rodeo in Story County.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of years ago, I guess, I was down in Maxwell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. And that they had obviously a traditional rodeo down there.
Yes.
And I wondered, are they the only town that has a rodeo? But now I know Nevada does.
That's right. Yep. And actually one of the... Well,
Eric Veers, who was one of the founders or played a big role in the Maxwell Rodeo, was the person who helped get this one set back up here a few years ago, 2018. So played a big role in helping getting this one off the ground and going again.
Mm-hmm. Along with the community, the sponsors that we've had, there's a lot of people to thank for their help.
It takes a lot of people to put one together. So.
And it's always Lincoln Highway Days, the Saturday of Lincoln Highway Days, which is the last weekend in August. This year it is August 28th, that Saturday. And we'll be having the Nevada Community Rodeo again.
Lincoln Highway Days, of course, is always big for Nevada.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It has been.
Since we're in a real estate office, I'll have to ask you, do you have houses listed in towns outside Nevada?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we service all of central Iowa.
Yeah, so we're pretty well, you know, in the central part of the state. So anywhere from Marshalltown to Boone to Bondurant to Zeering. I mean, we cover a good swath of central Iowa.
I know a lot of those places you'll have a lot of competition. But are there, it sounds like a Bondurant, I don't suppose they have a real estate agent in Bondurant. I could be wrong.
I think there actually is.
Yeah, we go as far south as Des Moines. So we go as far north as possibly Iowa Falls. But it's basically when we get those listings, it's a lot of times, it's all about connections and people who you know. And so they would be maybe from the area, have a house or a family member, you know, owns a house down in those other communities. Is how they usually get our name.
Yeah, so we're on three multiple listing services, so Ames, the Des Moines Multiple Listing Service, and Marshalltown. So we're able to serve a lot of our clients in that general part of the central part of the state.
And how has COVID affected the real estate business?
I mean, it changed how business was conducted for a good portion of last year. There was a lot of virtual showings, a lot of Zoom calls, you know, a lot of different ways of showing houses, I guess. This year, you know, things have started to get back to normal a little bit. You know, coming out of COVID now, we've seen a lot of demand, and we're still short, you know, on inventory for sure.
Well, this is something that surprised me is from a distance, is that just like Nevada redid its Main Street during COVID, which if you've got to go through that, it's a pretty good time to do it, I guess.
That's right.
And the other thing, though, that I wondered is it is one of the reasons that there's so many houses being bought and sold have to do, for example, with more available labor, or does it have to do with people having to spend so much time at home?
I think that could have something to do with it. I mean, we've seen strong demand on many fronts. We've seen a lot of people who maybe already own a home that have decided that maybe they need a larger house now. Maybe they're able to work from home. Maybe they need a home office. We've seen a lot of millennials that have entered the market as buyers now. That's really, you know, created a whole nother pool of buyers. We're seeing a trend this year, and it's really trending in a direction that prices are really going upward in a hurry. A lot of economic indicators that we watch are projecting values, you know, to keep climbing. So it's, you know, it's a great time to be in the house selling, the house buying. I mean, mortgage rates are still at historically low rates. You know, from a buying standpoint, it's really important now to make sure you align yourself with a good lender that you're comfortable working with. Make sure, you know, you have your pre-approval letter and all your finances are buttoned up pretty tight. You know, right now you need to be ready to act quickly because the houses come on the market and they're turned over in a short period of time. You need to be prepared to be in situations where there could be multiple buyers bidding on the same house. So my personal opinion this year, probably more importantly than ever, is to align yourself with, you know, a good real estate professional who can help navigate you through all this. You want someone who is able to hear about listings as soon as they come on the market, or a lot of times before they come on the market. You know, and a good real estate agent also knows, you know, different ways to make your offer stand out, to make it look more appealing to the seller. That's hopefully going to help you win, you know, that home when you're in that multiple offer situation. So,
one thing I was going to add also, during COVID, you asked, you know, things were a little bit slow while in the very beginning of COVID. We realize that the pandemic has not ended yet. We're going through it right now. But in the very beginning, we, you know, things kind of came to a halt. We were all quarantined at home for, you know, at least 2 weeks plus, and so things were quiet. So we took that as an advantage, and we're like, well, okay, so we're slow right now, so what can we do to reach out to our community? So there were a few things that we decided to help out with our community members, and one was we partnered with Ben Franklin, and we said, you know, if you need anything, if you are an elderly person or, you know, a weakened immune system, and you need someone to help shop for you, we'd be happy to shop for you and drop it off at your house. So we offered that service. And we also did a giveaway. We realized that the small businesses were hurting at this time, and so we decided to do a $19 gift card giveaway every week, which stands for COVID-19. And so we would draw, how do we do that? We put the business names all in a hat, and every week we would just draw out a business name, and then whatever business name got drawn for that week, then we drew a name out of the hat for a winner to win the $19 gift card to that particular place. So we partnered with, you know, Snack Time, Ben Franklin, Farm Grounds, Ace Hardware in town. So just a way that we could keep helping our small town businesses as well. So we started a Facebook group page also in April 2020. And it's a group where Nevadians and, you know, a few other people from surrounding communities, if they are interested in what Nevada has to offer, then they can join this group. And we try to share things that from our local businesses that are going on. So the local businesses will share, like Ben Franklin, I remember, was sharing that they have puzzles in. There's a puzzle shortage in during COVID. Everyone wanted to do puzzles. And so Ben Franklin was really excited. They got their order of puzzles in, and they shared it on their Facebook page. And so then what I can do, or anyone can really do, but that post then can get shared to this business group. And that way people who are in this group can see what Nevada has to offer. In that particular case, it was puzzles. But so that group is still up and running. And we have business owners, you know, from Farm Grounds that will share, Snack Time and Mi Casita, Unique Boutique. We'll all share some of their posts to this group so people can see what's going on. And then if I catch something, I can share it. Or it's kind of community updates. So if there's something going on in Nevada, we can share it to that page too. So it's just a positive place that people can feel supported and know that, you know, we're all there for the good cause of coming together for Nevada and supporting our community. The name of the group is called Nevada, Iowa Strong Business and Community Updates.
Well, what is across the street or catty corner across the street when you drive in Lincoln Way? What is that? Is that a city hall or a library or what? Mm-hmm.
Yep, that is our city hall, which they remodeled that or built it.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember.
A few years ago, mm-hmm. and then they added the green space. And so their plan is, or what they've done in the past is they hold like a magician one night and, you know, some musicians other nights. So trying to, again, pull the community together, you know, have something fun for the community to attend.
Well, of course, you're close to other things too. You're close. You have several restaurants. You mentioned Mi Casita.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And of course, you have another Mexican restaurant mm-hmm. on the corner.
Yeah. Yes, we do.
As well as a bakery, which I think is also.
Mm-hmm.
And you have gatherings.
Yes. Farm Grounds Gathering is event. Yeah.
And
but yeah, those places like Farm Grounds and Bricktown Bakery have really, truly pulled the community together. I am finally seeing friends. I run into family, you know, on the weekends, in the evenings. Whereas I feel like without those, you know, I would hardly run into anybody downtown Nevada. I always wonder, do people actually make it downtown Nevada? And now I'm starting to see more and more people come down here. So I think it's so important to keep doing those events and, you know, offering these great things that our restaurants are doing to bring people down here, because it's creating a really big sense of, you know, community that I have never personally felt before. Mark is born and raised in Nevada, so he's used to seeing, I guess, businesses come and go, but mm-hmm. but I think that we're, you know, we really like where things are headed in Nevada, and there's been the Burke expansion.
The Burke expansion happened last year, so they're offering quite a bit of new employment to Nevada. Just starting now, which it's just about complete, is a new subdivision on the south side of Nevada, so the South Glen subdivision will be opening up here shortly. They're actually pouring the concrete roads today, so that'll open up 26 building lots. That'll be ready this year, so I know there's, you know, a lot of excitement around that. It'll be a great place to build a home. A bunch of different size lots, from a quarter acre all the way up to just short of a 1 acre lot. They'll accommodate walkout lots, daylight lots. It'll be a really nice subdivision for Nevada.
So. And some other businesses that have expanded would be Midrite.
Mid-States Millwright. They've really expanded here a lot in the last 12 months. I think they've offered quite a bit of new jobs, too, to Nevada. So.
Dollar Fresh.
Yeah, Hy-Vee announced that they were going to be starting a Dollar Fresh store in the...
Right across from the pool, which we are very excited about. The Nevada pool will be back open this summer.
Were you not able to open last summer?
They did not open the pool last summer, no.
I guess probably none of the pools.
They did not, no. Ames was not open, and Nevada was not open, but they are this year. So I know kids are really looking forward to having the pool back this summer.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So a lot of good things going on for 2021.
Mm-hmm.
In case you just tuned in, this is KHOI Community Radio. And your hosts for today have been Gina McAndrews and Susan Franzen. So far today, we've been exploring how Nevada citizens have been finding ways to support each other in the wake of COVID-19. Now, this was a road trip, so I actually went to Nevada yesterday to interview Amber and Mark. And therefore, I could see things that you wouldn't normally learn about over the phone. One was that while the main street of Nevada, 6th Street, is all newly paved, that some of the side streets are not quite finished. And K Avenue, I thought it was interesting because I'm always hearing about K Street in the national news, but K Avenue in Nevada is a one block, has one block right by the main street, 6th, that is completely dug up yesterday. And also an institution we didn't hear about that KHOI regularly features is the Talent Factory. Well, the Talent Factory is undergoing a renovation. I think they've been closed for some time because nobody wants to go in. And so, of course, since they have a lot of out-of-town acts, it's not, you know, they're not bringing people in. And they are redoing their marquee because it says Camelot. And those of you who've been around for a while know that this was the historic Camelot Theater. So I think it's still going to be the Talent Factory. But it was pre-finished by Lincoln Highway days, I'll bet. But so to get back to...
How did it look when you were there?
What?
How did it look when you were there?
You mean yesterday?
Yeah. Were they making a lot of progress?
Well, no. It was just, I looked up at the marquee, which is about three houses down, three businesses down from Remax. And it was blank on two sides and said Camelot on the third. So I would guess they're going to completely redo it. It's all a work in progress.
And when's the Lincoln Highway days?
The last Saturday in August. I think the 20.
So it should be up and running by then.
Yeah, there's plenty of time for that. And in fact, they have Talent Factory has a show on May 22nd, just one in May. It's a tribute band, which they often do, Buddy and Beyond, the History of Rock and Roll. So their marquee will probably be ready by that time. Okay. And now we're turning to a serious story. This is a follow-up to last week's story about the response of Iowa citizens to the crisis of immigrant children and adults. I was still unable to contact the most active organization trying to link immigrant children with their relatives, which is the Catholic Worker House in Iowa City. However, David Hansen called to tell me about a somewhat older organization, Ames Sanctuary Interfaith Partner. So let's hear what he has to say about that organization and what they're doing.
I'm speaking with David Hansen from Ames Sanctuary Interfaith Partners. Could you tell us a little bit about the organization and where you are and what you're doing?
Sure. So the Ames Sanctuary Interfaith Partners, we use ACIP for it. And to remember ACIP, we say what we're trying to do is just take a small sip from the cup of injustice that's happening to the immigrant population. So we're comprised with about 12 congregations that have teams that want to work with the undocumented and those who are seeking asylum. We have four different faith groups in the 12, about 12 congregations that we have as members so far. So our emphasis is on the undocumented and the asylum seekers, both in our community and that are at the border detained by ICE, trying to support them, protect them. So I guess I should explain a bit. Sanctuary is confused a lot because there are two different paths for sanctuary. One is the traditional path where a physical sanctuary is located to live in within the sanctuary where worship is in a faith group. Then there's the new sanctuary movement that reaches out to the needs, protection, support for those who are undocumented and asylum seeking and beyond that. So we've got started hoping that we could provide support that would encourage a congregation to declare itself as a sanctuary congregation, offering living space for someone in the community that needs to be protected. So far, in all of the groups and Ames, not one has yet been able to declare itself a sanctuary building. So we continue to try to hope that there'll be at least one come forward, that we can encourage them with the resource base that we have that can help out if they don't feel they have enough human resources or other resources to take care of the requirements of such a person or family. And the other path is a new sanctuary movement, and that's where we're concentrating our efforts now with a number of different programs. So let me know what else you need me to talk about.
Well, I thought that you were involved with the unaccompanied children at the border. And that was why I first contacted you, because I was told that the Catholic Worker House in Iowa City was actively involved. And I tried to get in touch with them, but they have on their answering machine that they're not answering phone calls at this time. And so I imagine that they're so busy that they really don't have time to talk to anybody except people who are offering sanctuary. But now, your organization, I believe, was, now you told me that you were a Quaker, that this was originally two groups, the Friends and one other group, and it grew. Is that, am I correct?
Yeah, no, it started out as a interfaith group in the beginning. When we founded it, I headed it up, and I happened to be a Quaker, but it didn't start out being a Quaker activity.
But you mentioned also that you had a program for DACA.
Yes. One of the programs we have that we would welcome any support we can get from the community on is we have an application process for those who are eligible or who have applied for DACA status, but need the funds to go with their applications. There's a $495 non-refundable fee for any application. Under Trump, these were required to be every year. Now under Biden, they're changing it back to where it's just every other year. And we've gotten a tremendous number of DACA eligible or former or pending persons who just, it breaks your heart to read what's happened. One example, we had one, for example, who had a small artisan shop in Des Moines and with the virus just completely lost her business. She has two parents who are undocumented. They've also been unemployed. So she was a member of DACA, and then she let it expire because she could barely keep up with her rent and couldn't get that kind of funds together in order to spend it on the application. So her application expired, and she had in the process then outed herself as someone that could be picked up by ICE. So she was desperately in need of help to refile the application and reinstate her DACA permission. So we were able to step in and help her as one example of the desperate need that's out there.
Okay, that is, so that is your main activity?
No. No, that's one that we have a committee for working on. Another is we are starting in the process of supporting sponsors to bring persons who are in detention out of detention and the terrible living conditions situation that they're in being in detention. So to sponsor, there are thousands that are stuck in prison because they don't have a sponsor. It's required that the sponsor be an individual principal financial sponsor, but it can be strengthened, the application to do that can be strengthened if there are congregations or other groups that can support with resources also, so the burden isn't so heavy on one individual. Because housing has to be provided among the other needs. They can apply for a legal work status after 6 months in the United States, but then it takes quite a while before action is completed on granting the work permits. So there's a period of time there when considerable resources are needed by the person who wants to be a sponsor and help free them. And so that's where ACIP comes in to support.
Well, thank you very much. I think that's about how many people have you been able to sponsor?
We just started the program. We have one that's identified, highly recommended by her diocese in Honduras, who is stuck at the Mexico-Guatemala border. She has permission from the government of Mexico to be there, but it limits her to the border area. She can't go forward to the U.S. border. And we figure out that's because things have stagnated at the U.S. border. And so Mexico doesn't want a whole bunch of people roaming around the country, not able to get in, and they're keeping them down there at the border. So we have a sponsor for her. It's a matter of getting her across the border. As a bit of background, because there's so much misunderstanding about the people who are coming to the United States. thinking that they're coming here for money, and why don't they become citizens like the rest of it, others, and they just don't understand the situation, how urgent it is. In her case, she was raped. Her rapist was sent to prison. He got out early and found her and said, I'm going to murder you and all your family. She met with her father that night, and he suggested it would be best if she would leave Honduras immediately, both for her safety and her son. Her husband has passed away, and also for the safety of the family. So the next day she packed up what she could, headed to Guatemala, found sanctuary by the Catholic group there. And then the next we heard, she had crossed over into Mexico. So that's where we picked up with her and have been in touch with her. Just would be a wonderful addition to our community. Loves agriculture, has been in the United States for training 2 times. And that helps her application because she was here. She didn't try to stay here. She went back to Honduras. So they understand that leaving the lovely village with her family and everything is because of the urgency of getting out of the country.
Thank you very much. I think you've explained well what your mission is and a sense of the people that you're working with.
Thank you. Yeah, we have other projects too. We do letter writing and visitation to those who've been detained by ICE. And we get letters to our representatives urging them to include the most vulnerable population, which includes the undocumented workers in many cases, to have health benefits and other benefits that they are excluded from in the existing programs.
And do you have any, are you working at all on the children at the border? Or is that not part of your mission?
Okay. Well, that's sort of a recent occurrence that's come up for us. We have it on the agenda to look at if there's support to include those in the ones that we're trying to reach out to. If we have the resources and interest in the group, I think we will. There's just a lot of attention that's been given to that and the terrible situation, especially those who come in unaccompanied, obviously. So we'll be looking at whether we'll be able to include that in the kinds of activities we're working on.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Bye, David.
Bye.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and before we sign off, we have a statement from a broadcast of a new lawsuit from the ACLU protecting transgender people. Veronica Lorson Fowler describes the case and the persistent attempts by the Iowa legislature to prevent Medicaid from providing doctor-prescribed surgery for gender dysphoria. That was a summary of the cases that they've had so far. You'll see what that's why it's a summary. Following this is a recorded statement from Courtney Reyes of One Iowa describing why this surgery is necessary.
We have filed a lawsuit against the Department of Human Services on behalf of Aiden Vasquez. He has been denied coverage by Medicaid for his gender-affirming surgery. It is medically necessary. Multiple medical associations deem it as medically necessary for certain cases, and his doctors agree that this is medically necessary. We are bringing this lawsuit because the legislature passed a law that struck down coverage by Medicaid of transgender surgery in response to a victory that we had in the Iowa Supreme Court a couple years ago. So we are having to litigate this all over again, and that's where we are. We filed a lawsuit in 2017 for clients Carol Ann Beal and Ariana Good. In 2018, the district court ruled in favor. That was appealed by the state. Then in March 2019, the Iowa Supreme Court upheld it. Then just weeks later, the Iowa legislature, very upset by this, decided to try to undo the Iowa Supreme Court decision. So it passed a bill that removed the protections and removed the coverage. And then in May 2019, just again weeks later, we filed another lawsuit to counteract the law that was passed to counteract our previous legal win. And we filed it on behalf of two new clients, Micah Cunnington and Aiden Vasquez. And so that lawsuit proceeded. And then in August of last year, the Iowa Court of Appeals said, wait a minute, that might be their policy, but Micah and Aiden have not actually been turned down. So they have to go through the whole process of applying and getting denied and appealing and getting denied to prove that Iowa Medicaid is denying them coverage. So that is happening and has happened. And so now we have filed a new lawsuit saying we've jumped through all the hoops and proven that their coverage is being denied. And now we're filing a new lawsuit saying this is unconstitutional. The legislature in its law passed a bill that does amend the Iowa Civil Rights Act to remove protections against discrimination for transgender people who rely on Medicaid as a public accommodation. And so the new law allows government entities to opt out. So it basically says you don't have to do this. So anything that uses public insurance dollars can opt out, including Medicaid, to pay specifically for transition-related surgeries. So what they did was they fine-tuned the discrimination a little bit, but they reinserted it.
Do you have any special insight into why they are so concerned or who is behind this?
I don't think it's any one group. Unfortunately, I think the efforts to discriminate against transgender people are broad and wide.
So is this related to things like the bathroom bill? And
well, it's all related to some of this really horrible legislation that the legislature's been trying to do, in that there seems to be this assault against basic rights for transgender people, fueled by ignorance and hatred.
I think part of what I'd like to do with this time in connection with your lawsuit is to broaden people's understanding of what it means to be transgender. I think a lot of people just have no idea.
Somehow think that it's some cosmetic surgery to enhance your sex life, and it's not. It's your very being. It is your core. And they don't think they understand that when you grow up, and one thing, it's different for every transgender person. Not every transgender person feels like they need to have gender-affirming surgery, but a lot of people do. And, you know, people who suffer from gender dysphoria, starting in childhood, often start to experience depression, anxiety, and the suicide rate among transgender people is incredibly high. And that's why this surgery often can be life-saving.
My name is Courtney Reyes. I'm the executive director of One Iowa, and my pronouns are she, her, and hers. One Iowa is a nonprofit organization working to advance, empower, and improve the lives of LGBTQ Iowans. We know that LGBTQ individuals and transgender individuals in particular face barriers when accessing healthcare. This is why improving healthcare access for LGBTQ Iowans is one of our main priorities. Through our work, we have seen firsthand how powerful, life-changing, and necessary surgical care to treat gender dysphoria can be for transgender people. Transgender Iowans, they're our family, our friends, our coworkers. Everyone in our community should be able to access the medically necessary care that their doctor has prescribed for them. And this includes transgender Iowans. In March of 2019, the Iowa Supreme Court ruled that excluding transgender people from medically necessary surgical care was discriminatory, and it violated the Iowa Civil Rights Act. Unfortunately, just 2 months later, the Iowa legislature took it upon themselves to undo that ruling and wrote the discriminatory language into the Civil Rights Act itself. Again, this law that was meant to shield marginalized communities from discrimination is now itself includes discriminatory language meant to prevent transgender Iowans from accessing the medically necessary care they need. This ban risks the lives and safety of our transgender community members, and it runs counter to all of the available medical evidence. Nearly every major medical association, including two, but not limited to, the American Medical Association, the American Academy of Family Physicians, and the American Psychiatric Association, they all assert that this care is medically necessary to treat gender dysphoria for many transgender Iowans. We are proud to stand along the ACLU of Iowa, Micah Covington, Aiden Vasquez, and the work they are doing to secure justice they have been denied for so long. It is so clear to us that this current policy is discriminatory on its face, and we look forward to seeing that this case being presented to the court. Thank you so much for your time today.
You have been listening to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio. Remember that you can also hear it online at khoifm.org. And you can find links to today's guests and information you heard during the program. Local Talk will be rebroadcast at 7 p.m.
At noon, we are rebroadcasting Capital Week, which is originally broadcast on Mondays at 7 p.m. But this is another chance to catch it. It's with Dennis Hart and Laura Balin, who writes the leading Heartland blog. And she is following the legislature very, very carefully. And they have comments on all the laws. And she has something to say about this particular issue in this week's Capital Week. So stay tuned or tune in again. Local Talk was engineered by Michael Murphy. Hosts were Gene McAndrew, Susan Franzen, and guests were Lisa Reeves, Amber and Mark Olson, Veronica Larson Fowler,
Courtney Reyes,
and David Hansen. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! At the top of the hour. Morning Masterpieces will follow at 9 a.m.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, please contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or contact us through our website at khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member, or you can also renew your membership today. Just hit the yellow Donate Become a Member button at khoifm.org. If you enjoyed the show, please tell your friends. Remember, your participation as a listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
KHOI presents Chad Elliott and Bo Ramsey at Stevens Auditorium. We're on down the highway. May 9th at 5 p.m.
Or am I fooling myself again?
Come to enjoy the music and to support KHOI. Live streaming for home viewing will also be available. Tickets and live stream links can be purchased online at khoifm.org. Safety protocols will be in place with physical distancing in the seated areas and enhanced disinfecting procedures. Masks will be required unless actively eating or drinking. Thank you to Chad Elliott and Bo Ramsey for supporting community radio.
That I could stay. Oh, that I could stay.
CY Stevens is a co-sponsor of this event. Funding for this concert provided by the Ames Commission on the Arts.
Hello, I'm Dennis Hart.
I'm Laura Bellin.
We'd like to invite you to join us for KHOI Radio's Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything that's going on under Iowa's Golden Dome.
Each week, we'll talk about what the governor and legislature are doing, both in public and behind closed doors, that affect Iowans' lives.
So please make it a date. Join us on Capital Week, Monday nights live at 7. And if you can't make it then, catch the replay Wednesday at noon.
Right here on KHOI Community Radio.